It's a pleasure to be here with you. I know that you are here because you want to be a voice for the voiceless, and I can't tell you how honored I am to be able to spend some time with you. Dr. Peter Scare, who is Associate Professor of Exegetical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, in a 2013 Concordia Theological Quarterly wrote, quote, "When we look at Lutheran support for the pro-life movement, how far from the truth would it be to say that we are speaking of a case of faith without works? In convention after convention, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod passes pro-life resolutions by large majorities, verging on unanimity. On paper, we are a tiger. Yet, speaking from personal experience and listening to others, I can say that pro-life groups across the nation often find themselves frustrated with us. They know our pro-life stance, but they do not see us on the front lines, at the rallies or the care centers. Over the years, I have attended numerous LCMS churches, but seldom have I heard the life issue from the pulpit or in Bible studies." End quote. Now, when Mary went to visit Elizabeth, Elizabeth said, "As soon as the sound of your greeting reached my ears, the baby in my womb leaped for joy." I'll have to admit, when the words of Dr. Scare's words on that page jumped up at me, my heart leapt for joy. Obviously, I'm speaking to the choir here. I would guess most, if not all of you, are already involved in some way. That's why you're here. You want to learn more than you already know. You want to find ways to make a difference more than you already are. Or you want to find ways to get others involved. But I do have to say that when I travel the country and go to various events, Catholics and evangelicals are more involved and active in the pro-life movement than Lutherans are. My husband was a delegate to the 2010 LCMS convention in Houston. He was very proud that that body adopted a resolution in opposition to embryonic stem cell research by 97%. He said, "What other church body would have gotten 97% against killing human embryos for research?" Now, of course, being the good pro-lifer, I wanted to know who those 3% were, you know? Probably will never know. I just keep telling myself the resolution wasn't strong enough for them. You know? But as Dr. Scare wrote, on paper, we are a tiger. Let's find ways to show that this is not a case of faith without works. In Romans we read, "Let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God." When our founding fathers were creating this wonderful new country, John Adams wrote, "It has been the will of heaven that we should be thrown into existence at a period of time when the greatest philosophers and lawgivers of antiquity would have wished to live, a period when a coincidence of circumstances without example has afforded to 13 colonies at once an opportunity of beginning government anew from the foundation and building as they choose. How few of the human race have ever had an opportunity of choosing a system of government for themselves and their children. How few have ever had anything more of choice in government than in climate. How many people in the world get to select their climate?" Well, he was saying, how many people in the world get to select their government? We were blessed to be placed in a country that is a democratic republic. Our governing authority is not a dictator. He or she is not a monarch who received the throne from an ancestor. The government instituted for us is, as Abraham Lincoln said, of the people, by the people, for the people. If we do not preserve that government, if we do not participate in the process, we will lose it. John Locke said, "All that is necessary for the triumph of evil is that good men do nothing." Plato said, "The penalty good men pay for indifference to public affairs is to be ruled by evil men." And Jesus, whoever is not with me is against me, and whoever does not gather with me scatters. Lutherans understand that we are citizens of two kingdoms. And I am so sorry that I did not get to hear President Harrison's address this morning, but I am going to watch it because I've been told it will be on the website. We labor here as God's fellow workers to help bring more people into the heavenly kingdom, but we also need to labor for him for the good of this kingdom. Ours is a government of the people, by the people, for the people. It doesn't always do things right. We know that by looking at the Supreme Court imposed decision, which has resulted in the deaths of 57 million innocent unborn babies. Now, there are many ways to make a difference in the pro-life movement. We can educate with programs and projects and putting out resources. We need to bring the humanity of the unborn child into the public debate. We need to educate our youth and encourage them to get involved. To the young people here, I love seeing you. Not only can you influence your peers, but you will create the vision for which this country will operate and for which subsequent generations will live in. With our help, hopefully, and maybe you don't even need it, but we want to offer it, you will get this country to look at the last 40 years and say, never again. Something like abortion on demand will never again happen in this country. We need to continue working with women through the pregnancy resource centers, praying outside abortion facilities, making our voices heard in various ways, even through social media. But we also need to change the law. Not only will passing laws save lives, it is a great teaching tool. So if you're not comfortable with the laws, then look at it as an educational format. In 1976, Congressman Henry Hyde of Illinois was successful in getting Congress to pass an amendment to the Health and Human Services Appropriations Bill to prevent funding of abortions through the federal Medicaid program. Now, pro-lifers had to fight hard for many years to keep that amendment in place. But a conservative estimate says that more than 1 million Americans are alive because of that one amendment, because federal taxpayer dollars were not going to pay for the abortion. The state legislatures cannot pass laws to prevent abortion completely, but they have been passing laws for many years that will protect, to some extent, unborn children and their mothers. Like the federal limit on funding for abortion, many of the states have placed limits on state funding of abortion. There are informed consent provisions requiring that women be given clear and specific information about abortion, its risks, and possible complications before she makes that final decision. Now, most people understand that a doctor is supposed to give you all of this information before you undergo any surgical procedure. Most people would be surprised, however, to learn that in almost half of the states, there is effectively no requirement on the abortionist to tell the woman about anything that could happen to her or of what is going to happen to her baby. They don't have to give her the medical information of risks and complications. Now, this type of legislation to say, provide this information for the women, at least gets the public wondering, why isn't it available? Why does the state have to mandate that abortionists tell their supposedly patients, some woman that they've never seen before, what could possibly happen during the abortion procedure? Another example of state laws is making the abortionist notify parents before their minor daughter gets an abortion. Now, parents know their daughter has to get their consent before she can get her ears pierced, before the school nurse can give her an aspirin, before she can get a driver's license. So if you're talking about parental notice in a state, that kind of gets people, for legislation, that gets people thinking, why is there one exemption? Why should my daughter be able to get an abortion and I don't know about it? If something goes wrong, I'm the one that's taking her to the emergency room. I'm the one that's going to be responsible for her medical bills. And if she's crying in her bed at night, I'm the one that would like to know why. So using legislation is a great way to get people thinking about what's really happening in this country. Another one would be preventing webcam abortions, so that the abortionist sitting in his office can't prescribe a chemical abortion to a woman sitting in another room talking over the internet. Again, the public is shocked to learn that an abortionist can Skype with a woman in another city or even in another state and then decide that he knows enough about her physical condition to prescribe a chemical cocktail that will kill her unborn child and maybe gravely injure her. Banning abortion on unborn babies who can feel pain. How many people know that by at least 20 weeks after fertilization, the unborn child can feel pain? We were successful in passing a federal ban on partial birth abortions. It's amazing how many people think, at least thought, and many still do, that abortions were only legal for the first 3 months of pregnancy. They were horrified to find out about a gruesome procedure that was killing babies up till birth. In a similar vein, new legislation was introduced into the Kansas legislature last week that we're very excited about. The bill would protect unborn children from the brutality of dismemberment abortions, the most common procedure used in second trimester abortions. You pull the arms and the legs off of the baby, you pull the head off, you remove the torso. That is happening. That's the second most popular, or it's the most popular procedure in second trimester abortions. Kansas says we are not going to let babies die that way. If passed, these laws will save some lives. Like I said, because of the Supreme Court, we can't just, state can't just say we're going to stop abortion. But even if the legislation is not enacted because you don't have enough people in both houses to pass it or a governor that's going to sign the bill, discussing it in the public forum has the effect of educating people about abortion and the humanity of the unborn child that is involved in each abortion. Now, I would guess that everybody in this room knows who your member of Congress is. If not, go to the computer, type in www.house.gov or senate.gov, or I noticed in the members or the registration packets, you have this neat little card. So I hope you still have that. It's got U.S. House of Representatives, U.S. Senate. You can go to those websites and type in your zip code or your address, and it's going to tell you who your member of Congress is. If you don't know who your state legislators are, go to Google or Bing or Yahoo search, whichever engine you're using. Type in Pennsylvania legislature or find my Missouri representative, using your state, of course. Many websites are going to pop up on the screen. You can put in, like I said, your zip code, your address, and they will help you find who is representing your area. When you find those names and that contact information, keep track of it. Put it somewhere where you're going to remember where it is. If I have to send in for have some information that I want to make sure I don't lose or that I can have at my tips of my fingers anytime, I put the information in an email and send it to myself. That way, wherever I am, I can pull up my emails and say, oh, there it is. So if that helps, put the information in an email and send it to yourself. But keep track of it and then use it. When you hear of something that's happening in your state legislature or in Congress, it's a good pro-life bill that you want to support, let them know. If it's a bad bill, we've got some states now that are working to legalize assisted suicide. If that's happening in your state, make sure you know who your representatives are, your senators, your representatives, and contact them. Let them know that you do not want that passed in your state. If your church has some kind of tract rack where you display portals of prayer and Lutheran witness, type up a sheet with the information about where people can find who their representatives are, and just stick it in that rack. You may have some members who have no clue who's representing them, but they might be willing to contact them and let them know. I'm pro-life, please support pro-life legislation. You can get information on pro-life legislation in Congress from the National Right to Life website, among many others. Click on the word legislation on our front page. That'll take you to the Legislative Action Center. And from there, you can find out what bills are in Congress, how your representative or your congressman or your senator voted. If we don't elect pro-life the desire to pass pro-life saving legislation correlates to the need for pro-lifers to be involved in politics. If we don't elect pro-life candidates, we can't pass pro-life laws. If we don't elect a pro-life president and U.S. Senate, we will continue to see pro-abortion justices on the Supreme Court, and pro-life laws will be struck down, and the injustice will continue. Now, I know some pro-lifers don't like to mix abortion and politics. Some of them are people that are sitting in our pews. I've heard it said too many times, the pro-life movement should concentrate on changing hearts and minds. That's how we will stop abortion. Now, states run all kinds of public relations campaigns to change hearts and minds about why we shouldn't be drinking and then driving, why we should slow down as we're going through a road construction zone so we aren't hitting the workers. But the state doesn't just run the campaigns to change hearts and minds. It attaches a few penalties to any violation of, to reinforce the campaign. Nonprofits run campaigns to change behavior and to change laws. Who's going to tell MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, that they should concentrate on changing hearts and minds and forget about changing the law? Well, they're not going to accept that because they want drunk drivers, off the roads. So they are trying to save lives, and we want to save lives. One necessary way is by making or changing laws. The most effective way to get good laws written is by electing those who will write good ones. Now, it is important to note, and I want to make sure that everybody here understands, the pro-life movement has never advocated any kind of penalty for a woman who has gotten an abortion. She is a victim. Her baby is dead, but she is also a victim. We want to prevent the abortionists from killing the babies, but we have never advocated penalties for women. So I want to make sure that when I talk about campaigns, PR campaigns with penalties, we're not talking women. It's a long-settled fact of psychology, sociology, and history that many people depend on the law to tell them what is right and what is wrong, not just what is legal or illegal. If you talk to or read stories from women who have had abortions, you will hear many of them say, if it hadn't been legal, I wouldn't have done it. Because it was legal, they thought it was okay. Or because it was legal, they had a boyfriend or family members who were able to push them into that abortion facility. So the law can change behavior. William Wilberforce was a member of the British Parliament for 45 years, from 1780 to 1825. About 5 years into his career, he became a Christian, and he was going to give up his seat in the Parliament because politics and religion don't mix. But he had some friends who said, if you want to do something to change slavery, to stop slavery, you can be so much more effective if you are in the Parliament instead of on the outside looking in. So he changed his mind and he said, okay, I'll stay. And he was there for another 40 years. Wilberforce led the charge to abolish the slave trade. Now that took him about 20 years. The battle to abolish slavery altogether, not just the slave trade, took another 26 years. He was there and led the charge for most of that time. Now, would slavery have been abolished if Wilberforce had not been a member of the Parliament? Probably. But how much longer would it have taken? Because he was there day after day, year after year, saying slavery is wrong. Dietrich Bonhoeffer was a pastor who got involved in politics when he disagreed with his government's policies. Unfortunately, he was executed for his activities, but we consider him to be a hero and even a martyr. I would like to think that if the Holocaust, like that of Nazi Germany, was happening in this country, there would be so many pastors and priests and their congregations along with them protesting that we wouldn't even be able to remember all the names. But there is a Holocaust going on. The difference is that we can't see the victims and we aren't smelling the burning flesh. The IRS restricts churches from advocating the election or defeat of specific candidates, but the courts and even the IRS agree that churches can inform their members about where candidates stand on specific issues that are important to the church. Now, many churches do resist putting out this information, but I'd like to pose a few questions. If a candidate said, I think slavery was a fine institution. If I get elected, I will do everything I can to make it legal to kidnap people from another country and bring them here to become slaves. Do you think the pastors would be sitting in their office thinking, wow, I hope my parishioners read that in the newspaper this morning? If a candidate would say, the First Amendment states Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. However, I believe churches should be subject to the government. So if elected, I will do everything in my power to remove that phrase, prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Do you think pastors would sit back and say, you know, I sure hope my members saw that comment in the debate last night? You know, I think they would tend to be a little more active. At least I would hope so. So why aren't we more active when it comes to the deaths of millions of babies? Now believe me, after a major piece of legislation that was to be voted on in the United States House of Representatives yesterday got scuttled because of the antics of a few members who were supposed to be allies, I know that politics and the legislative process can be messy. The hard work of changing our laws isn't easy, and it isn't fun, but it's necessary. The political and legislative process isn't the only path we follow, but it is one that we need to be on in spite of temporary setbacks. We need to change the laws. Life, the protection of unborn children, should be an all-encompassing, all-consuming issue. And better yet, it shouldn't be an issue at all. And I was kind of pleased, I guess, that, you know, hey, Lila Rose and I both think it shouldn't be an issue, because I heard her mentioning it in the last speech. By labeling abortion as just another issue, it becomes just one of many in a long list of issues. Taxes, education, the economy, environment, it's one of many. It's not the preeminent issue, and it really needs to be. But that mistake is compounded when, as an issue, abortion gets compartmentalized. Oh, it's a political issue, it's a religious issue, it's a woman's issue, it's a young person's issue, it's a personal issue. By putting the decision to intentionally destroy unborn children into its own little box, too many people are able to make all manner of excuses. Abortion is a social issue. It's a moral issue, it's a religious issue, it's a biblical issue. Bible-believing Christians believe that each life is a unique creation of God. Psalm 139, you all know this. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place. When I was woven together in the depths of the earth, your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. People who could pass laws to protect unborn children will often use the excuse that abortion is only a moral issue or a religious issue. They say that political action shouldn't be undertaken. When it comes to those of our friends in the pews who don't want us to talk about such things in church, could it be that some of them don't actually agree with what their church and Bible say? And I know some of them. Is abortion a women's issue? Yes, it is. But it is also a human issue. Abortion advocates like to use this argument to stifle pro-life men from speaking out against abortion. But both women and men have the responsibility to speak up for the unborn child who has no voice. Not only does an innocent baby die in each abortion, but the woman, the mother of that child, is impacted. And men, yes, you have a responsibility and a right to speak up. My heart breaks when I think of the 57 million dead babies in this country over the past 42 years. But I hurt just as much for the women that have been involved in that abortion. I've seen women cry years after the abortion because they are still affected. They're hurting from that decision. And it isn't just the women who are affected. I will never forget the elderly man that came up to me at a conference last year. He said, "My wife had an abortion 30 years ago. We found out that she was pregnant, and I thought I was going to be magnanimous, and I told her that whatever she wanted to do, I would support her. If she wanted to get an abortion, I would support that decision." Well, apparently what she heard was, "I want you to get an abortion." So she did. He said years later, after their marriage had struggled, she finally told him it was the abortion. I didn't want the abortion. I wanted you to tell me that we would keep this child and raise this child and everything was going to be fine. Now, I don't know what the circumstances were at the time as to why he said that he would, you know, honor her decision if that's what she wanted. I don't know why she couldn't talk to him and say, you know, I didn't want the abortion, but she did. And tears filling his eyes, he said, if we hadn't had that abortion, we would have a child and probably grandchildren. This is someone that, looking back over his whole life, that is the one decision that they would love to change. They don't have grandchildren because they killed their only child. Abortion has had a devastating effect on women and men. Abortion is a young person's issue, but it is also a senior citizen's issue. Many say, you know, I can't get pregnant, or we can't get pregnant. You know, that's not an issue anymore. That doesn't concern us. But the killing of unborn children affects our nation as a whole, economically, spiritually, and everything in between. When we kill our children, we lose our soul, whether we are young, old, or somewhere in between. Abortion is a personal decision. Deciding whether or not to support the killing of innocent unborn children is a decision that we each must make individually. But it is also an issue for the country. We do not allow individuals to decide if and when they are going to kill another person. State and federal laws, as expressions of the citizenry, have something very important to say about that. And yes, abortion is a political issue. Every issue of what should or should not be legal is a political issue at some point. Our founding fathers declared that all life is created equal and that we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, chief among them being life. The laws of this great nation should protect the life of the innocent and the vulnerable. The Supreme Court threw this issue onto all 50 states, and we must respond. However, by reducing abortion to only a political issue, some of those who oppose abortion have an excuse not to get involved. When the world picks a fight with God's people over what God has declared right and wrong, we are called to proclaim God's truth to the world, and that includes saying it to the government instituted by Him. Life is too important to be put into a box or added to a list of other things to be addressed. Life is too important to be put on a back burner, and life is too important for excuses. There are a lot of ways that we can make a difference in this country, a lot of ways that we can be involved in the pro-life movement. We need to do everything we can in all manner of ways. Our founding fathers knew that without life, we wouldn't need liberty or happiness. Thank you. We have. Ed tells me to ask for questions. Yes?
I understand Rand Paul is working on legislation that will define human life at conception, and if so, according to the arguments of Roe versus Wade, that would eliminate that. Do you know anything about that?
I know some of it. The question was about Rand Paul's bill that would basically eliminate abortions, declaring that life begins at conception. I've talked to a couple of attorneys who said that that's really not going to be effective. I mean, Congress could pass it, but the Supreme Court will just say it's out of bounds. It's unconstitutional.
But according to the arguments within the original Roe versus Wade arguments that are recorded, they said that if it was defined as life at conception, then they would, that the decision would be moot and would be vacated.
I don't know of any attorney that supports, I shouldn't say I don't know of any attorney. The attorneys I've talked to do not support that and say it's still not going to work. That's not how you can overturn Roe.
That'd be great if that were.
It would, but it's. Yes, Patty.
Hi, Carol. About the Hyde Amendment, you mentioned the Hyde Amendment. What you didn't mention was since its passing in 1980 or 1979, it has excluded the children that are conceived in rape and incest, and also the health of the mother. So what are we doing about the exceptions in these bills that we're passing or not passing through legislation? Why are the rape, conceived, incest, conceived children excluded still?
A couple different responses. Even though the Hyde Amendment does have those exceptions, I don't believe that there has been a single abortion paid for, that people are not using federal funds no matter the circumstances. It's just, it's become a blanket, you know, taxpayers aren't paying for abortions. So that, even though the wording is there, it's not being used in that way.
We should get rid of that wording, it needs to be amended.
Okay. And that's going to be an ongoing debate in the pro-life community. Polling shows that over half of the people who say that they are pro-life and want to stop abortion would also support abortion for rape. That's wrong. We know that. But we have a lot of work to do. We have to educate not just the country, we have to educate fellow pro-lifers that every life is special. Every life is precious. When it comes to legislation, my organization will support legislation that has those exceptions. But we are looking at it, let's save the 98%, and I promise you, Patty, we are not going to stop until we save 100%.
Jesus left the 99.
He did. He did. But in this country, we are going to take every step we can, save as many babies as we can, as soon as we can. We supported the Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act. We didn't say that babies who are killed by suction abortions, you know, that's okay. We're only opposed to this procedure. We are going to take incremental steps, save as many babies as we can, and we're not going to stop until we save them all. Yes?
You mentioned the legislation recently passed in Kansas saying that abortion could not dismember the babies anymore. What procedure then is the abortionist going to use? That is the procedure that they use. So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Okay. Well, it has not been passed. It was just introduced last week. So they will go through the hearing process and they'll have to vote on it. Quite frankly, I don't care if there isn't another procedure. That means they aren't doing abortions, you know. But there are some. They can deliver the baby, you know, just the uterine contractions deliver the baby early, or too early for the baby to survive.
Okay.
Yes. Saline abortions. Those are not done very often because they're just too dangerous for the mother. But that is an option that is still out there. Yes.
You had mentioned candidate information forms. Do you have any organizations that you would recommend that has information? I know locally we have to do a little more research and put that together on our own. But for national candidates, I mean, we have an organization in our area that does put together for national candidates. However, they don't feel the need to contact the pastors before they come and leave their information in the narthex on the table, looking like the church is giving out that information. So I can just remove it without even looking at it, because if they won't even do me the courtesy of calling and asking, I'm not even going to review their material. But do you have any recommendations on organizations that can provide that information accurately as well?
There are a variety of organizations. Now, we will do something that's going to compare the candidates on the abortion issue. There are other groups that will provide other type of issues that are more, I would say, more pro-family type issues, not just the specific pro-life issues. Family Research Council, I know, works a lot with the churches, and they will do guides with various issues that the churches are going to be interested in. I believe Concerned Women for America may do something like that if you're looking for broader issues. And there are a lot of different groups within the states. A Family Policy Council, or a lot of our affiliates, will do something like that. It is available, but you know, I probably have to do a little bit of looking on the internet to just church guides. I would think if you just Google that, you're going to probably get some information on that as well.
Thank you.
Yes.
I just have a comment. You know, I'm against any exceptions. I think, you know, pro-life is no choice, you know. And we need to speak boldly and stand boldly, and that should be our stand. And instead of trying, okay, let's get our foot in the door and hope maybe later on we can open it a little bit wider and a little bit wider, you know, I think we should be bold from the start.
My concern is that if you do that, you will not be saving, you will not be passing any laws, and you will not be saving any babies. Save as many as you can, as soon as you can. But keep working. Like I said, don't give up. We're not going to give up until we can save them all. But if you do where, you know what, until we can save all the babies, get the perfect law, that's all we're going to settle for, not settle for, but that's all we're going to work for. You've got a lot of babies that are dying in the meantime. And that's very hard for me to accept, that we could have stopped some of them. We could have saved some of those babies, but we didn't, because we couldn't save all of them. And that's, to me, that's kind of where the choice is. And I want to save the babies now. Yes,
Donna. I'd like to just say something. I've been in the pro-life movement for about 25 years now, long enough to see and help to defend some laws that have been passed. And if you pass a law that you think is perfect, but it isn't defensible, and Planned Parenthood takes it to the Supreme Court, the state that passes that law gets to pay all of Planned Parenthood's court costs because Planned Parenthood ultimately wins. So there is a very good financial reason for incremental legislation. And I just want to remind my brothers and sisters who feel as passionately as I do that every single life, and as passionately as you do, that every life is important. But I don't want to pay Planned Parenthood for losing a law that we could have won if we'd have allowed for a short time, to, like you said, save 85-90%, and then go after the next 5% after that one's won. So I think there's really, honestly, two passionate sides to this, and I have been part of defending laws that were ultimately defeated and watched the state line Planned Parenthood's coffers because of a law that was ultimately defeated. So I think, you know, we have to give each other some grace here for different ways of going about it. They're the purists and the incrementalists, and both of them need to fight as best they can, but we can't fight each other. We need to remember who the enemy is.
One more. Yes.
They need to give me some leeway here because I kind of failed government. What about legislations of like information that before you get an abortion you have to like study or learn about? Because I know personally that the information that you learn from pro-lifers helps not get an abortion or ask the words.
Well, if you're talking about the informed consent provisions where a woman has to get information before she gets the abortion, is that what you're asking? Okay. Some of the states have said she has to get the specific information about what will happen to her baby, the complications that could arise from this particular procedure, alternatives that are available. Some of the states have now started including in those laws that an ultrasound has to be performed, and it's kind of a variety of options. Some of the best ones will say the screen or that monitor of the ultrasound has to be positioned so that the woman can see it if she wants to. She can look away, she doesn't have to look at it, but she has to be able to see her baby on the ultrasound. And that is the law in some of the states. Unfortunately, like I said, about half of the states, 23 states, have no informed consent provisions in place. So the woman goes to the abortionist, you know, he does the abortion and sends her home, and she's like, what happened to me? You know, why am I feeling this way? I'm scared. I'm not feeling good. Should I go to the emergency room? Absolutely no information is provided to her. which is why we need to work on making sure, because when the women see the ultrasound, they choose life. They want that baby. That's why the abortionists fight so hard. They don't want the ultrasound. They don't want to have to provide information. The state of Kansas has a great website with pictures of developing babies in 3D and 4D formats. And a woman has to sign, and the abortionist has to, you know, check, have you seen this website? So she has a chance to look at all these beautiful pictures. Now, it's not hers specifically, but it'll give her an idea of what, you know, what is growing inside of her, that this is a life. It's not just a blob. So informed consent provisions have been very effective in getting women to change their minds. Thank you all very much.